喵喵喵喵
喵！Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, the worst form of entertainment, except for all the others. This is, we're broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Michael and Derek?
And the show is brought to you by our newest sponsors, the Medellin Cartel. They're back in business in Colombia, and they are financing the feeds. I'm kidding. There is a new show. This show is dedicated to Pablo Escobar, the greatest libertarian of all times. You guys don't know who that is, do you?
Who's that?
I think I heard his name in like Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail or some Hunter S. Thompson
probably.
Thing.
I've seen.
I don't know who it is.
Yeah, I've heard references to him in movies. Cocaine, yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah. He was a cocaine trafficker. I mean, like, he basically built the worldwide market for cocaine. Like, You know, before him, it was like something that Peruvians, you know, chewed, you know, when they were like riding their llamas up to the Peruvian Mount Everest.
Did he do it with peace and with the market, or did he do it with violence?
No, but there's a new show about him called Narcos, and it's on Netflix, and it's like one of those Netflix produced, like really well done, like better than anything on TV, and they drop the whole season in one night. So you can binge watch it, and it's a really, really well made show. I'm digging it, and they paint Pablo Escobar as like really likable, which is really weird because there's kind of this rule of writing that I learned from Hubert Selby Jr. In this interview I did with him, like he said, like it's one of the parts we didn't even use. He said, like it was actually Jerry Stahl talking about advice he got from Selby, and he was saying, like, you know, no matter how messed up your main characters are, they have to be likable in some way. Like you have to care what happens to them, and really, like, that's the biggest problem with movies and TV shows that don't work. And I think, like, I know what's wrong with these shows, and the people making these shows in Hollywood don't even know. Like, a really good example is that show Halt and Catch Fire. Have you seen that? It's about the computer industry in early 80s, and it's made by AMC. It should be really good. It's kind of like, you know, the same people that work on Breaking Bad. Except, like, nobody, you don't care what happens to anybody in it. So, like, I watch every episode of it because I like the subject matter, but when I'm done, like, I'll never rewatch it. I don't recommend it to friends. But, like, Narcos is painting Pablo Escobar as this, like, really likable, generous family man. And he kind of was, in a way. I mean, he was, like, you know, he was bringing, like, 700, you know, kilotons of cocaine per year into America in the 80s. And, like, he had so much money, he couldn't even, like he bought his way into Congress. He became a congressman in Colombia and was going to, like, run for president. And, you know, then, like, other congressmen denounced him as having made his fortune with drugs. And, like, you know, they'd be denouncing him from Congress. And, like, when they got home, like, their house would be blown up with their family in it. And he, like, he was so ruthless, man. He took out commercial airlines full of people to kill one person on the airline. But he also, like, he had so much money that he had like 100 houses in Colombia and other countries and like ranches, and like he had so much money he couldn't even like launder it all. He couldn't even like store it all. Like, it was being eaten by rats. So, like, he would just go down to the ghetto and like line up and like personally like hand out like $1,000, you know, to each family that would just walk up. So when like the CIA was down there looking for him, whenever he was like moving around, like, there'd be hundreds of people informing to him, like, oh, this, you know, like he was like Robin Hood, man. Like, everyone loved him, you know, like he financed like youth clubs and soccer teams and like, you know, free medical clinics. I mean, he was like doing more social services than the government. And he had a bounty on policemen, like, you know, $1,000 for every policeman people killed.
Oh, my God.
Mind blowing, man. I mean, like, this guy.
So, what happened to this guy?
Ran the nation.
CIA,
CIA went down and killed him.
Oh, man.
Because there were their excuse was that there were two Americans on that plane he blew up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sure, yeah, watch the show Narcos, man.
Well, what's really Narcos? Likeable. Is that like narcotics, or is that like the people who rat on?
No, Narcos are the sellers. Narcos are the cartels.
Yeah, isn't that the same root? Like a narc is a person working for a narcotics officer, isn't it?
Right. I think the phrase Narcos kind of like, you know, there's the phrase like narco state. You know, I mean, he kind of like turned Colombia into a narco state in a way.
What is that, like a state that's run by drugs?
Yeah, there really aren't any per se, but like I guess like some people have used that term on Afghanistan at times and on Colombia.
It makes me wonder what a free market of drugs would like look like. I mean, like, would there be these Pablo Escobars, or would there be many of them?
No, and
would
there be the value that he derived? Here's why he's interesting to me. The final nail in my coffin of going from minarchist to like anarchist happened like 7 or 8 years ago with me posting on the Free State Project New Hampshire forums and arguing with people that drugs are horrible. Drugs make people like Pablo Escobar. And like somebody on there was like, no, the war on drugs makes people like Pablo Escobar. Without the war on drugs, Pablo Escobar would be selling bananas or, you know, selling stolen TV sets or something. And,
right.
You know, which is what he started doing. Like he got into cocaine because he already had smuggling routes with stolen electronics, you know?
Yeah, so I guess they wouldn't exist. They would end up being in places like CVS and Walgreens, and you'd get your cocaine at the local
drugstore.
You're
going to be able to buy pot when you get to San Francisco, man. You'll just walk into stores and buy it.
Nah, I don't want to do that. I'll lose my gun rights.
Yeah.
It's still too super controlled. There's no freedom for cannabis. Huh? Yeah, because you'll lose your gun rights. I think that's the trick.
For the medical, you have to... Yeah, I think that's why they're doing it. For the medical, you have to do that, but... What about for the recreational in California? You still have to register and get a card?
Yeah, same thing. You have to go and get a card. Now, here's the other thing. I hope that this is covered by the BIPCOT no-gov license, so government agents can't listen to this.
Stop listening now.
If I were to go to San Francisco, I probably wouldn't want to like relocate on paper. I would want to have like a shell me, and the shell me could go get the pot card, because apparently the pot card is all you need to get drug deliveries of cannabis.
What happens if you get caught there without the card?
They're not allowed to search or ask for a card. So like, say I've got pot on the street, I can just say, look, I'm registered.
Really?
I got it. Yeah, they need a warrant in order to search my pockets. So,
oh wow.
You know, they just have to assume that I'm right, that I have a card, and otherwise.
I wonder what the legality is of if the BIPCOT license could actually be able to protect anyone in that way.
Yeah, like it should. Because
I mean, it should. But you know, it kind of sounds like those stupid things that people put at the end of their email, like, you're the only person I know who still does it, like the NSA disclaimer that's useless.
Yeah.
You know, dear government, you know, dear shadow government that doesn't follow the laws, you're breaking law if you read
you know
email.
Why? It's not laws. It's a private rule. It's a gentleman's agreement, you know? It's about having respect for your fellow man. Because that's the only law that I really care about. Is I watched a... trial happened in Wisconsin where a man was being prosecuted for selling raw milk. And the thing that got him jury nullification, where the jury just said, look, this guy broke the law, but set him free anyway because it doesn't matter. This law is stupid. Was because he had a contract on paper that said, look, this is what I'm doing. You're my customers. I'm going to sell you this milk. You know what's happening. It was full disclosure. Okay. So I think that's like that people have a respect for that. So if the government was like, oh, look, we took your emails and all this private information, and then the jury was like, oh, but look, here at the bottom it says you're not allowed to use this, you know, I feel like they would have respect for that, because I did my CYA.
Dude, I cracked a rib coughing this week. I didn't even know that was possible. Last week I passed out coughing and broke my nose and went to the hospital, and this week I cracked a rib coughing. I'm a mess.
Are you made of paper mache?
Is that because your ribs are soft or because your coughs are hard?
It's probably both, but I'm also on prednisone, which is a steroid that helps with the asthma, but it's kind of a miracle drug, but it makes your bones softer too. But I don't know if I've been on it long enough to make my bones soft, but no, it happens, man. It's an old people thing. I'm 50 now. I'm old.
So I'm pretty sure my Pablo Escobar, is it Jimmy Fallon?
No, It's actually a Brazilian guy. Go on, Dobby.
What? I was going to say, I'm pretty sure my dad still puts the whole carnivore list in the signature of his emails. You know what that's about?
Yeah.
No.
Your dad's a hippie, though.
Carnivore was like one of the early pieces of NSA type software, and it was essentially would search through all emails for certain keywords, and then emails that use these keywords.
It was telephone. I think it was pre-email, and then got applied to email.
Okay. But so once the list was leaked, it became common for people to just put the entire list as the signature of their emails, so you'd flood the system with flags that were meaningless.
Yeah. Although it's probably pretty easy for them to ignore it when it's, like, in the same block, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they probably just copy-paste, search, and then delete
Somebody actually made a Firefox plugin that, like, puts those words in the header of your email, like, searches. In the headers, like, you know, the stuff that you don't see that's behind the scenes.
Well, it's a funny list because some of it was, like, totally random. Like, you wouldn't know what it was unless you knew what it was. Like, it would be, like, UT-789, and you're like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But then there was other stuff in there that was, like, Bugs like, Bunny.
You know, flu would be one of them. Yeah, like, you know, one would be Bomb, which makes sense. But I was in a band called Bomb, and I'm sure, like, and I still, people talk to me about it all the time. I type Bomb on the internet every day, probably.
So. You know, speaking of, I just saw one of your magazine clippings, an interview of you and your band Bomb.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of the best ones that I've seen. Like, how big is your collection of magazine clippings? Are you like,
talking about the one with the naked woman on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, I just imagine you with scrapbooking.
I don't have any of them, man. Because, like, I was living such a weird, like I've moved like 40 times between then and now, you know? I mean, I moved twice in the past 10 years, but before that, it was like, you know, every week you will once it's the San Francisco way, you'll get used to it.
Yeah.
But so, like, I don't own any physical thing whatsoever that I owned in like 1998.
You know, so, how do you have these copies? How are you posting magazine clippings?
Somebody
from
sent
1992?
Me that. Somebody else had that and sent it to me recently.
Oh, wow. Thank goodness. Yeah. It's a piece of history. Yeah.
But it's like none of that's on the internet because the internet didn't exist back then. Like, we were in a lot of magazines, but they're just, it's pre-internet, you know?
Right. Do you remember what the quote was? It starts off the
It says I started the band to see people have sex with me. I was lying. I started because other reasons, too. Here we go.
Worms.
Meow. That's a good quote to give somebody.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Cock-a-doodle-doo!
Trigger warning. Interesting content. If interesting content offends you, you should change the station now. Because we're going to be talking about interesting things.
Did you say that you got in a car accident last Friday?
Yeah, a week ago Friday.
Who caused it?
It was a little over a week ago. The other guy, he ran a red light and T-boned me in the intersection.
Oh, man, you're lucky to be alive.
Yeah, well, totaled the car, and then he drove away. So it was a hit and
run. Oh, wow, that was really nice of him.
Yeah.
You know, what would we do without a state? People could just hit other people on the road and then drive away. Oh, wait.
That's exactly
what happened with a state.
I'm of the opinion that he drove away because of the state.
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty likely scenario, right? He didn't want the cops to show up, and life would be bad for him. And if he could just drive away, then things will be all
right. Right, so most of the time that people, when people leave a scene like that, it's because of some sort of paperwork error, right? They're an undocumented, you know, immigrant, or they don't have their car registered properly, or they don't have their insurance registered properly, or maybe they're a little high, or maybe they're a little drunk, or whatever, right?
Right, things are going to be extra bad.
Things are going to be extra bad for them if the police show up. It's not actually out of like a callous disregard for this person they would have injured. Like the state puts them in this impossible dilemma of doing the right thing and exponentially increasing the consequences.
Did you get a look at this guy or gal?
I got, so this is kind of funny. Like, I get out of the car, he drives away, and it doesn't even occur to me to call the police. That's just not the way I think, right? I start looking around at witnesses saying, like, hey, who saw that, right?
And you don't have a dash cam?
No, I don't.
Davi.
What is my wife's car? I don't even own a car.
Oh, pass the buck.
You
were driving.
That's true. We could put a dash cam in there.
They're cheap, you don't need a witness.
So here's the thing, right? A witness shows up and he says, "Yeah, I got a partial on the plate, and here's my name and address." And I'm essentially taking a statement from this eyewitness. And then the second person comes up and says, "Did you call the police?" And I'm like, "No, why would I do that?" Right? And like, because it was a crime.
You're like,
and I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess
that's true. Do I want a gang of murderers to come here?"
Right. But then, so they pointed out that the insurance company will only take a police report. They won't take an eyewitness account. So the person who saw it and the person in the accident, that doesn't matter. What matters is the police officer who comes to the scene and then takes the statement from the witness and the person that it happened to, right?
Right.
So secondhand hearsay is better than a firsthand account in the world of insurance. But the other interesting thing that happened is the way that uninsured driver insurance is written. If you don't know whether or not the other driver is insured, the insurance company won't do anything. So because the guy's a hit and run and the insurance company can't tell whether or not he has insurance, my uninsured driver's insurance doesn't attach. And so insurance won't cover the damage. So the only way to get...
make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense, but if you read the fine print on the contract, that's clearly
what it
says.
That's how it works. Okay.
But here's what
that
means.
Who would sign up for something like that? I mean...
Everyone. It's obligated by law. You have to have a car. Yeah. So, I'm forced by the state to get this insurance policy. As a result, the insurance company is not as incentivized to put together a contract people actually like because they have to sign up. But the other thing is, that means the only way for me to get the insurance company to pay out is to get the police officer to catch the guy.
Ooh, okay. Well, how do you incentivize the police officer to catch the guy?
I don't want the police officer to catch the guy.
Why not?
So this is the dilemma I'm in, okay?
You want the police to catch the guy because then you get to prove that the guy either had or didn't have insurance, and then you get the police report.
Yeah, but I also ruin his life. It's already a felony because it's a hit and run, so he's looking at jail time. No, he has not sent me to jail for a year.
Okay.
That's what a felony would do, at
least.
You're
really trying to protect this guy. I mean, talk about turn the other cheek. It's a hit and run, and you're like, oh, I don't want him to go to jail or anything.
But see, I don't believe this is the irony here, right? I don't blame him for hitting and running. I blame this infrastructure of bureaucracy and legal framework for him running, right? And so now, like, the institution that caused the perverse incentive to hit and run is also the only institution I can appeal to solve the problem. You see what I mean?
It's funny because if you did find him somehow, like on Facebook or whatever, and then like reached out to him, I doubt he would believe you. Like, no, really, I don't want to turn you in. Like, I just want to help. I want to resolve this problem. Like, here, let's meet up. And I mean, there's no way I would trust a person like that. As friendly as they might seem, it's like, I don't know. I think if I meet you at Starbucks or something, you're going to have police with you.
I suppose if I could prove that he was him, I could provide the information to the insurance company without the police. But as it stands, that's not possible.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Wormify. Dobby, you love Derek. Bitcoin. I love Bitcoin. Yeah, I heard that you have some merchant. Not to get off topic of your awful car crash. I'm very sorry to hear about that, but I did hear some exciting news that you've got new merchandise at Nakamoto's, which is like a one-of-a-kind Bitcoin store, and you can buy things in real life with Bitcoin there. And you've got like new merch there, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is the stuff that people have already seen at BitcoinNotBombs.com, but there's, I think, I don't even remember everything that they grabbed a hold of, but I think
it was mostly
Bitcoin. Do you
have any, like, one-of-a-kind stuff? Any of your posters or paintings? Because I know you sell some stuff like that at Porkfest.
Yeah, I had two of those left, the Bitcoin Not Bomb stencil spray paint graffiti things. I have two of those left, and I'm probably going to find a way to make them into a fundraiser of some kind, like maybe an auction or something. I haven't figured it out yet.
Cool. Well, those are hot.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of looking into this idea of like sending merchandise to various storefronts on consignment, if that makes sense. So Nakamoto's is one. Brave New Books is another, or wherever, I don't know.
So like freedom businesses around the country. Maybe the libertarian-owned thrift store in Keene, New Hampshire.
Yeah, what is that one called? It's called like...
101 Deals.
101 Deals, right. So I emailed James Cleveland, but I don't know if I even have an up-to-date
email
for him or if he even responds to emails. But
yeah, well, it's a libertarian-owned thrift store, and they sell all kinds of fun things. They sell Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree DVD and also like Coplock t-shirts and stuff, so I'm sure they would have a place for Bitcoin Not Bombs things, because they also have the only Bitcoin vending machine in New Hampshire. New Hampshire. It's the only public one. And people have been coming. I was working there earlier this week. People came from as far as New York. People came from New York City.
Wow.
All the way to New Hampshire. People came from Massachusetts. People come from Vermont. And I don't even think there's one in Maine anymore. So people have been traveling all over New England just to come to this one vending machine in Keene.
Now, here's the thing. Are the people from New York complying with all of New York's Bitcoin license regulations?
I don't know.
Just the fact that they have physically left the territory of New York make them exempt from it.
Because
if they digitally leave New York, that doesn't count. They still have to comply.
Yeah, well, if I'm in Colorado, can I smoke up, you know, as a tourist? Can I enjoy some of the freedom there? And if I go to New Hampshire, can I open carry and enjoy the freedoms of that jurisdiction? So I would think that, yeah, leaving New York and coming physically to New Hampshire means that you have more freedom.
Yeah, I would think so. But you never know what sort of arguments you never know when they're going to claim to own you, you know?
Well, also, I'm still in the middle of attempting that, like, I don't know. I'm attempting in court. I got a traffic ticket, a parking ticket for $5, and I challenged it. And I tried to plead guilty saying, well, yeah, just show me where the law, show me where it says that I agreed to these rules or that the rules apply to me somehow. I just want to see where it says the rules of the state of New Hampshire apply to me because I'm physically in New Hampshire. Like, I get that that's your argument. Show me where the facts are that support your argument, you know? You can't just assert something without facts. This is court. So where are the facts is what I'm asking for. And they don't have any. So you know, they haven't presented any yet. So I would say that the laws don't even apply to the people in New York. They don't even have to leave.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I guess that is the first assumption of any statutory system, and that is that it applies to people.
Yeah, so, like, oh, interesting law you made there. So how, like, what does that suggestion mean for me? Like, what, like, do I really have to do that? I don't think so. I don't think I have
to. What about free range people?
Free range people. Yeah. Did you see there's a video, I think, yeah, we talked about it on one of the episodes of the Freedom Fiends with Diana Davidson, about a girl who screamed rape when the cop tried to pull her over because she was like, I'm a free range person. I don't know if that was the term that she used, but it was like, the Constitution doesn't apply to me.
Sovereign citizen thing, right?
Yeah, it was a sovereign citizen thing, and she was like, you know, this doesn't apply to me, and you're not allowed to pull me over. And basically, I mean, I agreed with a lot of where she was coming from. I mean, what right does this stranger have to demand you pull over and follow his orders, step out of the car? Maybe I don't feel safe stepping out of the car. You know, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're going to do. And you've got weapons on you, clearly visible. So I'm going to ignore those suggestions that you make for me. I'm going to stay safely inside my car.
So why'd she choose to scream rape? Is it just because he was touching her?
Yeah, it was. I think she stepped out of the car eventually because of the threats that he had made, and she agreed to be handcuffed, but with her backpack still on. She wanted her backpack to stay on, and he cut the straps on her backpack. And I think that was the point that she screamed rape, not that it was a thing that she was being physically touched, because she was being like arrested, but it was that her backpack was cut. Her property was damaged. I think that was what really upset her. Was because cops can lie. Like, they're legally allowed to lie. And he was lying the whole way of just being like, oh, it'll be fine. You know, you just step outside and you'll be on your way, you know, but really you're under arrest, you know? So cops will sometimes lull you into a false sense of security and then slap some cuffs on you. So I don't know. I just wouldn't want to obey them. I would want to peacefully not comply and make sure that it's video recorded. Like, where is your dash cam, Dobby?
You I've get never one had now? A dash cam. I mean, I suppose I haven't owned a car since dash cams were the thing. So, like, for me, I just don't drive often enough. I'm a full-time bicyclist, and so I don't even think about it.
Yeah,
but it does make sense to have in those cars. What?
Do you ever encounter cops on your bike?
No, almost never. It's one of the reasons I like bicycling is they don't really have any reason to pull you over.
Hmm. But they've never done it. My friend's been pulled over here in New Jersey for like running a red light on his bike. And I thought that was crazy. The cop demanded his driver's license. And I was shocked that he actually complied and gave him his driver's license. The cop gave him a ticket. I don't think there's I don't think that's
fair. But he's
fair.
Not driving.
It's not driving. Yeah, exactly. It's a bike. I don't think that the vehicle codes apply to bicycles, but
yeah, you know, Derek, you're talking on the radio, so I'm going to need to see your pilot's license.
Yeah, exactly. It was that bizarre. But then again, you know, cops can just demand things of people and, you know, you don't know the law. Nobody can know all the laws. And it's just so much easier to just comply with their demands and get it over with and then move on with your life. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what he ended up doing. But it's still great to ride bicycles, and I've tried to evade police on bicycles, so I'm a big fan of bikes, but I don't know.
Well, I imagine the snow in New Hampshire would preclude being a full-time bicyclist. There's got to be some weather conditions where you absolutely need a car.
Yeah. I don't know. There are some people who ride throughout the entire winter. It doesn't slow everyone down. There are plows, you know, they clear the roads.
Okay.
So it's fair, but there, you know, have you heard of there are places that want you to register your bicycle as well? Like, just like a car, and you would have like a license plate and everything. You'd have like a card that you carry with you. It's too much. I like being able to jump on my bike and go. You know, it seems so natural. But having to carry cards and government paperwork with me and attach government tags to it, no, no, no. I'm not doing that.
When I was a kid, they had an opt-in registration for your bike. And you could go down there and they would like record the serial number on the bike, because I guess all bikes have serial numbers. And that was supposed to deter theft or something like that. But it kind of, in hindsight, it kind of felt like, you know, all government programs or most government programs, they'll start out as a sort of watered-down version of where they end up. So,
yeah.
As far as I know, you don't have to register your bikes in California.
Not yet. You know, that's the other thing. Michael started talking about it earlier, about the cannabis cards that you can get out in California. I am so excited and pumped about that. But I don't want to lose my gun rights. And I feel like that's the trap. That not stupid. They are saying, oh, yeah, everyone go get your cannabis card. It's so easy. Everyone can get one. And then with the stroke of a pen, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, everyone with a cannabis card
can't
have a firearm anymore. Or you lose some other rights, you know, about self-defense, or it could be anything. So I don't want to claim to be dependent on some drug. I'm not dependent on it. And I hate that that's like part of getting the card. It's like, oh, I'm weak. Oh, I need this thing to get me along.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, because I get the idea. The idea is, like, if you're stoned out of your gourd, you probably shouldn't be operating a firearm. Okay, fair enough. But to say that, like, because you have the license to purchase marijuana, you therefore cannot own a firearm is sort of like saying because you have a license to drive, you therefore cannot buy alcohol. Right?
Right, yeah.
Like, you don't necessarily have to be doing both of these things at the same time just because you have permission to.
Yeah, and I don't even understand. I've never heard anyone make the argument that you can't be stoned out of your gourd and operate a firearm. You know,
no, it is, but that's still legal. Just, you know.
Well,
that's the opinion of bureaucrats who have probably never smoked pot or fired a firearm.
Well, that's true. But I enjoy seeing responsible firearms owners in places like bars, where I'm like, oh look, you know, they've got a gun and they're being responsible. And they're not being totally drunk. Some people at Porkfest, when they, you know, it's very popular to open carry at the Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire. But once people start drinking, sometimes they'll put their guns away or lock it up or just, I don't know, they practice their level of personal responsibility, what they feel is right for them. I love that.
Sure.
So, what's the next step of this car accident? I mean, are you going to vigilante justice this thing, or have you called the insurance companies, or do they get you a new car? What happens now? Do the cops help at all?
I think nothing happens now. So I don't know. The cops took a statement. They came out and they took my statement and the witness's statement and, you know, swore up and down they were going to chase the guy down. And then there's, like, an opportunity to, like, send the case number to the insurance company so they have evidence.
Boo.
But when I tried to do that, the police department basically said, oh, yeah, that guy isn't back to work until Wednesday, so try back again at the end of the week. You know, like he hadn't logged.
And this
his
is the guy
reports.
you need his report to give to the insurance company. Wow. That's service.
Right. So I think I'm just going to ignore it from now on.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow.
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 Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
Hey, Dobby, so one of our listeners actually just messaged me and said that he has been pulled over on a bicycle for riding a stop sign and received a ticket. So I guess this does happen all over the place.
Now, wait a minute. I've heard this from so many statists that the reason you have to abide by traffic laws is because you opt into them by agreeing to get a driver's license. So why does a bicyclist have to stop at a stop sign?
Because they also have a driver's license, right? I mean, well, if the cop can look up your name and be like, whoa, looks like you agreed to all these rules, well, I'm going to have to give you a ticket.
But he pulled him over before he knew that. He just pulled him over because
also that contract is baloney, because you can't enforce a contract that is signed under compulsion. And you are pretty much compelled to agree to the rules of the road and get a driver's license. Because if you don't have one, then you go to jail.
Well, also, if you're not allowed to travel on the roads, you're essentially in a concrete cage. So, like, you can't really leave your home without stepping on a road.
Have you heard of the claim? This is new to me, but someone has made the claim that licenses are illegal, and that the Supreme Court of the United States has ordered, or has, you know, I don't know what the word is, has ruled that licenses that require a person to pay for their freedoms, for inherent freedoms that they should already have, are illegal and are null and void. So you don't, they're not required. They're unconstitutional. And so theoretically, this says to me that if I were to drive around without a driver's license and never show my driver's license to an officer who pulled me over and took it all the way to the court and showed the court, hey, the Supreme Court has said, you know, these licenses are invalid, that I would win. But I haven't seen anyone do this yet.
I mean, that sounds sort of like the magic word sovereign citizen stuff to me. Like, some obscure legalese somewhere is
going to
thwart
their... It's not obscure. The Supreme Court is not obscure, though.
Okay. But it's the same sort of argument, right? Like, you're going in with a sort of set of laws that even if they're on the books, they don't recognize, because it's like, you've heard of blue letter laws, right?
No, what's that?
It's like laws that are still on the books, but everybody's sort of forgotten about and doesn't enforce.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like in California, it's illegal to operate a horseless carriage without a lantern, a man walking with a lantern out in front of the horseless carriage. Of course, now we have cars, and cars have headlights, and so this law became obsolete, but they never took it off the books.
Right.
So there are these laws that... They're left on the books because everyone forgot about them, and if you try to bring them back up in a court, everyone would be like, oh, well, everybody obviously knows those are obsolete now. And it's the same thing with laws that they've forgotten that you could use in your defense. They'll just sort of look at it like, okay, I guess maybe that's written somewhere, but that's not how this court operates, right?
Right, yeah. I bring that up sometimes with people when I make the argument I explained in the last segment that, like, hey, if... the government's asserting that the laws and codes of the state of New Hampshire apply to me because I'm physically in the state of New Hampshire, then what are the facts? What's the evidence to support that? You know, and if there isn't any, then dismiss this and let me go. People are like, well, it's been like 200 years, and if that were a legitimate argument, then people would have been using that all this time to get out of anything. And so clearly that can't be the case. You know, that can't be
that
legitimate.
That must not be true, because it's never been done before.
Exactly.
The only things that have been done before are legal.
Yeah, you can't have new ideas. That's probably not legitimate.
It's sort of like before he went like full tilt anarchist, Lysander Spooner used to write constitutional opinion essays against slavery, arguing that slavery was unconstitutional because of his, you know, his interpretation of various clauses. And at some point he just had to give up, and he said, it doesn't matter if it's constitutional or not, it doesn't matter if it's legal or not, it's an abhorrent practice, so just be against it.
I'm sort of going in the opposite direction, where I was just sort of like, oh, I don't want to pay any attention to any of these rules. I don't need to study or learn any of them. Just, I want to live free and take the consequences. Now I'm like, okay, show me the magic words. Show me the magic parchment paper. I'm going to try this stuff. I hear it could work. Everyone wants to give me their best idea. Well, let's try it out on video.
Well, I'll see, be there when stick. You need a legal defense fund, Derek.
Thanks.
Worms.
Meow.
For some reason, in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiendphone. I'm using Fiendphone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiendphone.
Fiendphone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiendphone right now at Fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiendphone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to Fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's Fiendphone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. This is a reminder that by the BIPCOT no government license, this allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Beastlick.
So there you go. What did I say? Didn't I say Beastlick?
I know, I just Beast like Plaza. Saying that.
Beast Plaza is in Beastlick, Wyoming.
gross. So I was thinking during the break, well, first of all, we have a correction to make, that one of our listeners, who's super vigilant, sent me a link to Snopes, which is a website that rates or investigates the truthiness of claims, truth or falsehood of particular claims. And there is an article for "The Supreme Court Rules Driver's Licenses Unnecessary." Snopes reports this is false. Sorry, everyone. I was wrong in the last hour when I was explaining that you don't need driver's licenses. The Supreme Court has ruled you don't need them. But that was a lie. I didn't realize I was lying. I was just mistaken. So, thanks, everyone. There you go.
It's nice to have a good sort of free market institution double-checking what the bureaucracy is doing.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of free market institutions that do their own, like, investigation and rating systems, I was thinking, this is an idea that our mutual friend Mad Bitcoins has brought up on his various programs, but I still think it needs to be done. I haven't seen a Bitcoin licensing agency other than the government. Like, here's the government coming out being like, oh, you need our license, blah, blah, blah.
What do you mean? Well, Bitcoin not bombs has the intergalactic bit license.
Okay, that's the only one. But I mean, like, you just pay for the license and you get it. I want to see a license that means something, and the government one doesn't mean something, and the Bitcoin not bombs one doesn't mean something. No offense, but I have one. I love it. But I want to see one that's like, you know what you're doing with Bitcoin. Like, you are running
a credential,
a Bitcoin node, you know, yeah, like, you have passed a test, you know, you have a certain level of knowledge that puts you, you know, it's a credential, yeah, it's a, I don't know what the word is, it's not a license, but CPAs have these things, you know, it's like,
it's almost it's like a test. Degree.
Yeah, I think it is like a degree, Bitcoin University, you know, I want to issue these to people who actually know what they're doing, or maybe someone more knowledgeable than me should be issuing them. But either way, this needs to exist in a way that, so when government people are like, oh, well, do you have a license to be a money transmitter business or whatever? It's like, no, but I have a you know, this private market license that shows that I actually know what I'm doing with Bitcoin, which your license doesn't prove anything. It just proves I paid you off.
Yeah.
You know, this proves that I've got some knowledge. Anyway, I think that would be valuable.
I mean, it's too bad most credentialing institutions, like whether they're colleges or universities or even sort of smaller private instructional facilities or whatever, they require you to undergo the coursework with them before they will give you a credential. There are not very many credentials I'm aware of that are just like, yes, we're confirming that, like a notary, like we just saw that you know this.
Right. That's what I want. It could even be automatic. I feel like it should be an online test. You could take it as many times as you want. Once you pass, you've got it. You know?
Yeah.
Or maybe it should be taken like in a SAT room, you know, with a proctor, so that you know that someone's not cheating, that, you know, they've got the knowledge. Maybe it could be essay-based as well a little bit, so it's not just a computer that could fill these things out and give people fake licenses. You know, you could verify them.
I would kind of, I mean, I want something like that for pretty much every field in existence. You know, like, I would love to be able to, like, it really is more of a notary than a certification. I would like to have some institution or some reputable organization just say, yes, we've checked him out and he knows this. He can speak intelligently on these subjects and not have to, like, go back and start with remedial coursework in each subject. Like, to verify what I know as opposed to, because I didn't really learn anything in college courses. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, it would be more valuable during resumes or during interviews for jobs. Because it's like, yeah, I went to this college. I went to this thing. It doesn't tell you what you learned or what you know. You know, okay, I took a class in multivariable calculus. Does that tell you anything about what I know about it? You know, but if I had some certification or degree from the Calculus Teachers Association of the world, I don't know, of the universe, then whoever I'm applying to would be able to have some sort of reference and be like, okay, well, Derek knows at least enough to do this job. You know, he's got the skills necessary. I would think it wouldn't just be for math and sciences, but it could be for art as well, like the Cartoonists Association of America. And, you know, this person can draw all of the Looney Tunes, Warner Brothers, you know, classic cartoons perfectly, or can draw the Simpsons certification. You know, you've got all the Simpsons characters down solid. You know, like, you could collect all these certifications and badges, and they would be value that you could prove that you can offer to your next employer.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Why isn't this happening already? I'll bet it has to do with universities and subsidies and, I don't know. If you look at the sort of like large firms, tech firms, successful companies like Google and the like, they
wait a minute. It is happening already. What about FoodServe and FoodServe is a private food safety certification company, and like all restaurants, if you want to run a restaurant, I mean, you pretty much have to make sure that your employees are FoodServe certified. Meaning they've gone through a training and they know that they're handling food safely. They're not going to poison people by accident. They're going to be clean. So, I mean, that it does already exist in one realm, at least.
So what I mean about Google and their hiring practices is that there are firms like that that sort of repeatedly say that degrees don't mean very much in their hiring practices. They're much more interested in seeing what sort of freelance projects you've done or what sort of like ways that you've demonstrated your skills as opposed to like a receipt that says that you studied these skills.
Right.
And that's because they're looking for a particular kind of self-motivated person who, you know, getting a degree does not say anything about your motivation. It just means that you were able to sit in a desk for all the right, you know, number of hours in a week and fill in all the right bubbles on a Scantron, right? It doesn't say anything about what moves you or what's intrinsically valuable to you. And, you know, companies that are more concerned about the human part of human resources are going to be more successful.
Hmm. So
that's what I think anyway.
Well, I'm learning that there are even more certifications now, too. There's apparently an Amazon Web Services Certified Architect award, or whatever you would call it, license, I don't know. And you don't have to take any classes, and it is proctored in it is a proctored in-person test on a computer. So Amazon is doing this. So maybe there are like big level companies that are already employing this practice that have seen that universities, their degrees don't mean anything. They want to see some evidence that you actually have knowledge.
Yeah. There's also, I used to write, I haven't in years, but I used to write for examiner.com, which is a sort of like, you know, professional, amateur, freelance journalist thing okay. where like pretty much anybody, you had, there was an essay application, so you had to be able to like at least write coherently in English, but pretty much anybody can claim a column and write articles and self-promote, and you earn like a penny per hit or some minuscule amount.
Woo-hoo. But
if you hit a viral whatever, maybe you make some money. But the interesting thing about that was there was inside behind the login for each writer, there's a thing called Examiner University, and there's like dozens, maybe hundreds of courses on how to improve your writing style.
Wow.
For sort of particular industries.
That's great.
And it was just a free thing that they had. It was like you'd watch these little 10-minute YouTube videos about like how to write a good headline or how to write a good citation or how to do a good interview. And I took full advantage of that. I don't have any receipt to sort of show for it, but I at least, you know, I digested the knowledge.
Wow. Yeah, aside from porn, self-teaching is my favorite thing about the internet, about how you there's so much so many videos. If you want thing, you can just Google how to and then whatever you want to learn, and there's some like millions of people who have all just taken a video camera and decided to record themselves, you know, creating their own oven out of aluminum foil and cardboard, or you know, whatever, you know, they've got their own mm-hmm. projects, how to make a bug out bag or whatever you're interested in. I think that I mean is so valuable. That's something that everyone can do to contribute to the knowledge of humanity. We're all pouring
sure
this knowledge database, all pouring our knowledge into it. It's really cool, and then we can extract
from
it too.
We're gonna have to come up with a, I mean, like, as information is increasingly decentralized, we're gonna have to come up with a decentralized way of verifying, like proof of education or proof of attention or something. Like, we're going to have to blockchain our university degrees at some point.
Huh. Yeah. Well, I mean, the way you prove you know something is like, by doing it, right? So if, like, I don't know, if you want to prove you can program because you want a programming job, you show a program that you've made.
Yeah.
But are you saying that people won't be able to verify that you did that program or that you wrote it or something? I don't understand. What do you mean by, like, proof of knowledge? How do I walk around like, proving that I have something in my brain?
Let's say, for example, you wanted a job operating a piece of equipment that you could not afford, right? Like, yeah. Say that you wanted to be a construction worker and you wanted yeah. to be the guy who drives the forklift.
Yeah.
You would have to find, you would either have to get on the job training in that piece of equipment, or you would have to be able to show the employer that you knew how to use that piece of equipment before he would let you have access to it.
You should right? do it with a virtual machine, like with what they do with aviation. You sure. know, you can't just fly a plane, but if you can fly a plane for 10,000 hours on a virtual box, then, you know, maybe we'll take the risk of letting you fly one of the real ones.
Worms.
California, Uber Alice.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
I love to
meow 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 meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Too busy talking to do a talk radio show.
As always, yeah.
So the end of that story, since the listeners missed the beginning, is that my cat has taken a liking to the tent in the living room. It's become his hangout spot.
Aww, that's cute.
And I guess for parents of little kids, a tent is, I think, would make a really good playpen. Because, like, it's not a cage. It's, like, sort of fun. But it's also got, like, a tarp floor. So if the kid, like, poops or pees or barfs or whatever, that you're not going to ruin your carpets.
Yeah.
And if you take the rain awning off the top, the whole thing is see-through, so you can look inside and make sure the kid's alive. And
yeah, so it's a playpen that's not a cage. I like that.
Yeah. Right now, yeah. It's like my yoga studio. Like, I have a mat in there, and I have some,
how
like,
big is this tent?
Mine is, it's 10 by 12. It's a big tent.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You must have an enormous living room, too. If it can fit all that in a couch.
It takes up most of... No, the couch is inside the tent. A lot of the furniture has had to be moved inside the tent to make this work.
Oh, my gosh. What does your wife think about all this?
She thought it was funny.
Okay.
Yes. I sort of surprised her. She was out of
that's
town.
That's past tense. What do you mean? She thought it was funny, and now it's just sad. Now, now it's annoying. Like, Dobby, so put this tent away.
She was out of town, and so I sent her a text message on the day she was coming back. I said, "Trigger warning: I'm moving furniture," which is not that unusual of a thing, but this was a particularly unusual.
Giving your wife
design.
A trigger warning or moving furniture?
Moving furniture is. I like to move furniture. But yeah, this was a particularly interesting or unusual design, so I thought I should warn her. And she just thought it was funny. And
she's,
you know,
like, okay.
Have
you guys had dinner
that
in the tent?
Hang out in the living room a lot more than we have. Yeah, in fact, we had sandwiches in the tent today.
Oh. So the kids are calling them now?
Yep.
Well,
one of these days I'll broadcast the Freedom Fiends from inside the tent. The catch is
the tent.
I haven't
sounds
quite
creepy.
Out how to get why?
It's, I don't know. It sounds like I don't know. It's sub basement. It's like I'm in a basement right now, full disclosure. So I'm just as creepy. But tents are like, I don't know. Like, they're like windowless vans, almost. It's like, oh, I'm in a tent. What? Why are you in a tent? You're in a house. It's like building a tiny
windows.
House. It's like putting a garage in your living room. You know? Yeah. This, a tent is for outdoors. You put it on your front lawn.
You're underestimating the level of frivolity.
It's fun. Okay, but it's fun. So this is like an adult cardboard box for you. You have a fort.
Yes, that's a great analogy. This is a fort in our living room.
You're I don't want to, like, I don't mean to insult you. You have the spirit of a child, and that's a good thing. I'm not calling you a child, but I'm like, it's fun and cool that you can enjoy that stuff and be just. I think most people wouldn't even think to put a tent in their living room. As much joy
should.
As it would bring them, well, now
they
now
they
will.
They can learn from my example.
Yeah. Especially if they have cats or small children.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. So would your did you move the litter box in there? Or
No, I've sort of been thinking about moving the litter box in there, but I'm worried that'll be like too much of a. I don't know. Like, if the tent is ever closed, what will he do?
So what's the primary reason for this tent? I mean, is it just a place to meditate? Is it like a punishment? Like, you know, go in the tent now. You're not.
No, it's just, I don't know. It's just being playful.
Okay.
It was a fun idea. I couldn't think of a good reason not to do it.
I would avoid the tent. I have to be honest. I'm thinking about like this tent being in my house. I would have to take it down. I don't want
why? So, it's not like the thing is closed like a van. Like you said, it was like a windowless van. Three of the four sides of this tent are mesh, so you can see right through it.
Oh, so it's more like a cabana.
Yeah,
I suppose. Know where it's open.
Yeah,
tents to me seem closed off. It's not
maybe
like
that's because you're used to like a standard tent is 6x6. This tent is 10 by 12. This is at least twice the size of a standard tent.
It's not domey either, right? Is it boxy or domey?
It's domey.
Yeah, can you stand up inside in all the parts of it?
Yeah.
Okay, well then that makes it more palatable. I don't want to have to... It just seems uncomfortable being in a tent. It's dirty.
I don't know. No, it's totally clean. Never been used.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
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 So, Dobby.
Yes.
When we have heroin vending machines, one of the things that I want to put in them that's super boring but super helpful is antibiotics. And I know antibiotics are super helpful, and I often know when I need them. Like, oh, I have an infection, I better get some antibiotics. But it's not as simple as that. I can't just go to the heroin vending machine and go get some antibiotics.
Oh, man, I've felt like this all week.
I have to go to a doctor and get an appointment and get a permission slip and pay some money and then go see him. And then I come back and he's like, here, get some antibiotics. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I knew that. And then it's like, you have to go and get another permission slip and go to the pharmacy. And then they're like, are you sure? Do you have a birthday? Do you have a social security number? Do you have a phone number? Now you can have antibiotics. I'm like, okay, thank you. I knew I needed this all this time. And it's wasted another week that I've been suffering with this infection. So, yeah. What's your story?
So, this happened, and this is in relation to the car accident, right? So, as soon as I, like, tell people that I've been in this car accident, immediately, everyone circles around me and says, well, you have to go to the doctor. I realize it doesn't hurt right away, but, if, you know, whiplash can take a couple of days to set in, and so go to the doctor now. And I'm like, okay, so I do. And the doctor sort of pokes around. He says, is this muscle hurt? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, or there's a woman, actually. And she says, I'm going to prescribe ibuprofen and muscle relaxants. And I'm like, well, that is exactly what everyone said. I could have come up with that on my own, right? And so I go and I'm like, I don't need a prescription for ibuprofen. Like, she prescribed 600 milligrams and the counter ibuprofen is in 200 milligrams. So I'm just like, I'll just take three. I'll be fine. But the muscle relaxants I'm not allowed to buy except for at the pharmacy. Then I go and I tell people this is what the doctor said. And the reaction I get is, well, you mean they didn't get an x-ray? They didn't prescribe physical therapy? You have to go back to the doctor and twist their arm and make them get an x-ray. I'm just like, you told me to go to the doctor and then you don't believe what the doctor said and you say that you have to. Why didn't you tell me in the first place? Go get an x-ray, go get physical therapy. Oh, it's because you can't. You don't have access to these things until you've seen a doctor, at least twice in this case. So, yeah, I mean, I knew what I needed, you know? Like, I would have maybe taken, like codeine instead of the muscle relaxant because, I don't know, I grew up with codeine around in the house and I know how powerful a pain reliever it is. But, I would have taken ibuprofen for inflammation. These are like things that I know, and they're things that most people know. Most people know when they have sort of a common injury or any injury anyone in their family's ever had before. Like, they know what they need. They're just not allowed to buy it.
Yeah, that's how I was feeling this week. I was like, I know that I need antibiotic. Can I please just have some? And the answer is no. So I thought that was pretty strange. Fortunately, I got all the proper permission slips and did get the antibiotics, so everything's going to be fine. But it just stood out to me as really strange and bizarre. My sister is a doctor, so to your point about, like, oh, you know, the doctor tells you things you already know, and then people demand that you get the x-ray and all the rest of the stuff. She tells me that all the time. Like, part of the reason that healthcare is so expensive is because customers demand all of these extra services, like getting an x-ray for a flu or whatever, you know, like stuff that doesn't even make sense. But
it's because they don't experience the cost of it.
Exactly. Yeah. The cost all goes to the insurance company.
It's a $20 copay to the insurance company no matter what I go in for. Or those probably exceptions, but for the things that I've been going in for, right? So I don't have any sense of the difference in price between an x-ray and 15 minutes of a doctor's consultation, right? Yeah. Like, I imagine subjectively the x-ray is probably more because they'd have to pay the technician the same as they paid the doctor, and there's this huge piece of equipment, but I don't honestly know, which means I'm not making an economic calculation when I'm seeking medical treatment. I just want everything. Give me everything. Right?
Yeah, which that's the attitude that a consumer should have, right? Like, you as the customer should be like, give me as much as possible. And
well, yeah, if everything's free. Like, let's use Costco, even, for example.
No, as any customer, I mean, you always want as much value as you can get. And it's up to the producer to offer you as much as he possibly can, you know, within reason. So, but that's what they're doing. They're trying to do their job. You're trying to do your job. But I feel like the balance that you give each other is skewed because the government, like, says, oh, this all has to be done through insurance companies, right? Like, you all have to have... I don't know. Actually, it isn't, is it? Because you can pay cash for some doctor's visits.
I don't honestly know where the mandate is for health insurance. I'm under the impression there is now a mandate for health insurance.
Yeah, but people can ignore that, too, right? Like, there's just, like, a $100 fine or something if you ignore it. And that's if you file taxes anyway. So, you know, if you don't, then you're not paying anything.
I don't know.
Yeah.
My analogy with Costco is if you go into Costco on free sample day, you're going to try everything. If you go into Costco on a regular day, you're just going to buy the thing that you want.
Yeah. Good point. Maximize utility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would put I'm wondering, like, so who's going to be the person to make the antibiotic available, or who's going to make the drugs available, or is it going to become like pharmaceuticals? I guess they already are on the Silk Road, right? Like the underground marketplaces, the free markets online. People are using these to get actual drugs. Like, we started this conversation talking about
People with relatives in like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia or Egypt. They'll stockpile antibiotics when they visit relatives and then bring them home because you can get them over the counter in those countries.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And my mom did this with codeine. This is why I grew up on codeine instead of ibuprofen, was because when we lived in Saudi Arabia, you could buy codeine over the counter. And so my mom stockpiled on it before we left.
So, like, let's talk about that, because when I bring this up to not freedom people, they're like, yeah, but that would be crazy. I mean, everyone could just go and get codeine, and then they would treat problems that
everybody
they don't really
just manage
have.
Their own pain.
Yeah. Well, they say it would be not good because of things like, well, super strains and addiction. You know, like, well, what if everyone takes antibiotic for everything, and then bacteria just grows to be resistant to all antibiotics, and then they just take over the world and everybody dies?
Well, I guess then things would have to come with instructions.
Yeah, but people don't follow instructions, so everybody's going to die, Davi. You can't allow freedom, or bad things might happen.
Because everyone will die. I just don't believe it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how you're going to keep people from creating super bugs or whatever. I just don't believe that will happen, because it's already such a common objection. Like, I feel like everybody knows that that's how antibiotics work, or they're like one step removed from somebody who's going to tell them the moment they get on antibiotics.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like, has it always been this way? Could you used to go get what you want from the drugstore? I feel like you used to be able to. So I guess this has been incrementally introduced through like medicine in the U.S.
Yeah, but that was a simpler time when people actually knew things.
Yeah, not like it was the age of information or anything. I feel like it would be so much easier to... Like, there's WebMD now. You know, if I want to look up what's wrong with me, I can pretty much determine it. And if I make a mistake, who cares? Doctors make mistakes. I'd rather
look at
it be
the alternative,
my mistake.
Right? The alternative is this doctor prescribed me muscle relaxants, and I couldn't even tell you the name of the chemical. I've done zero research on what the side effects of this chemical are. I'm just like, oh, the doctor gave me a prescription. I'll take it. Right? Like, that's totally irresponsible now that I think about it.
Yeah, that's letting someone else do your thinking for you. And it's something that you're putting into your body. My goodness. I mean, it's going to interact with the rest of your body. That's something you should definitely be incentivized to learn about.
I mean, I guess it came with a half sheet of warnings and stuff.
Yeah, he threw that right out.
No, I kind of glanced at it. I was, you know, I wanted to know if I could drive a car, and it said to be cautious while driving. So I'm like, okay, I drive cautiously. That's not a problem.
Yeah, not like those other times when you're driving recklessly. Be cautious this time. That's pretty funny. Yeah.
But you know, the opposite is like with the codeine, which, you know, I get from my mom because she stockpiles it. It's like she knows how to use it. I grew up with it as a sort of normal thing because we had so much of it. And so I know what it does to me, and I know what it's for, and I know what it's not for, and I know sort of the hazards of it, because it's just like a kid who grows up around firearms. Like a 12-year-old who grows up around firearms is totally different from a 12-year-old who grows up around like gun grabby parents, right? So
the one I had was Novocaine. I don't know what's, you know, if this stuff is legal or whatever, but once upon a time when I was a kid, we did have Novocaine in the house just if we had toothaches or whatever. Like, I think that if she was, like, as a kid, like, your teeth will fall out and stuff, you know, as you lose your baby teeth or, like, I don't know, for whatever reason, your teeth will hurt as when you're a kid. And Novocaine really solved that problem. Just a little bit on the finger and rub it on your gums or whatever, and the pain goes away. But that's not something you can just go and get from a doctor. At least, I don't think so.
There but is, like, I don't know that it's Novocaine, but there is like a pain relief sort of liquid you can put on your gums that I've gotten before, but I don't know what chemical it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's all basically the same thing. Oh, good. Okay. Well, I'm glad you can get this stuff. I like the idea of people treating themselves. I feel like people are best suited to treat themselves. Like, doctors, they just don't seem that interested. Maybe it's the doctors that I've been to. Maybe it's been bad experiences. But then I look at movies like Requiem for a Dream, you know, they have the quintessential doctor who doesn't even look up from the clipboard, just, you know, looks at you on paper, who you are, doesn't even analyze you as a person, and then just makes this regular prescription suggestion that he got from the pharmaceutical industry reps who just visited him like an hour ago and dropped off a bunch of free pens and samples and stuff. It's like,
yeah,
I don't want to put my faith in these people. I would rather put my faith in me.
I mean, that's the other thing, too. Even if it comes down to physical therapy and I go to the doctor and they start, you know, describing physical therapy, like, I grew up around chiropractors. I grew up around masseuses. Like, I've taken a handful of yoga classes. Like, there's a good sense in which I can sort of manage my own physical therapy, too.
Yeah.
Like, I know how my body works. So,
yeah.
I don't know that I need an expert opinion to tell me how to stretch properly.
Yeah, it is sort of weird. Like, my body's not a car. I'm very intimately familiar with this thing. I don't need all your advice, Doc.
Worms.
Meow.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow, meow, meow,
meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow, meow,
that's my canary noise. It's horrible, though. Yep. I'm the warrant canary.
We tripped and fell into the last segment of this show. This has gone by so fast.
What? Oh, no. Say it ain't so.
No, it's true.
All right. Well, I guess this is redemption in the final act. So we should recap the things that we talked about. Pablo Escobar brought the world lots of cocaine. And now there's a free market on the internet. So Pablo Escobar, I guess, I don't want to make a comparison between Ross Ulbricht because he was no Pablo, but I guess he did make a lot of money and he did make a market for people to medicate themselves, empower themselves. And,
sure.
I would like to see more of that. And I guess we will see more of that because there's no stopping these decentralized marketplaces that exist on the darkest parts of the internet. That gives me a lot of hope. I don't want to call it a dark place. They're forts. They're tents. They're tents in your living room.
Yep, intense marks.
Yeah. I was joking earlier during the break that I figured it out. The tent in the living room is like a womb for you, Dobby. And it makes you feel safe and comfortable.
It's cuddly and it's, you know, it's a little tight, but it's still room to stretch out. And
and you said you don't care that it's weird, you know.
I don't care that it's weird.
All right. I just want to let you know if you're doing something weird. But you say it's not accidental at all. When are you taking it away? Is it a permanent fixture now?
No, nothing's permanent.
Well, I know nothing's permanent, but
I'll probably leave it there until, you know, the next time I feel like moving furniture.
I have a hard time, I'm not implying that you and your wife fight, but I would imagine any couple would fight about this. They would be like, no, this isn't happening. You guys haven't had any kind of, argument about this?
No.
Well, she's great. She's very accepting, then.
What's to fight about? It doesn't hurt anybody.
I don't know. We couldn't be married, Davi. I would fight with you about this.
Yeah, okay.
I would say no to the tent. You can have it for one day, and then you're taking it down. What if the neighbors want to come over? What if they see into our windows?
The neighbors have come over. My neighbors think it's cool.
I guess you live in California, so it's a bunch of hippies.
Yep.
California. Uber Alice. So you have to prepare me. Maybe that's what this final segment. Just prepare me for California because this is the last segment of the Fiends that I will do outside of California. Now it's all Cali all the way, San Fran. So what should I expect? Lots of flowers and naked people?
There are lots of flowers and naked people. I think the best preparation that I could give somebody planning to move to California is plan to be exceptionally tolerant of every difference of opinion except yours, which people will be utterly intolerant of.
Get out of here. For real? I haven't experienced that so much. When I was there in Cali, people asked me about, you know, my gaydarkest pin. I wear a pink and black pin that you created, Davi. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it started some discussion about living in a world without a state. And people were, not all embracing of it. Obviously, it's can be a shocking idea to some, but I thought it was received pretty well, generally.
Probably would be. I mean, yeah, you're not going to find that. You're going to have a hard time finding people who are like homophobic in San Francisco. And the mere word anarchist isn't going to, you know, upset most people. But if you get into the sort of specifics of what you mean by anarchy and you talk about property and you talk about capital and you talk about commerce, like they're going to, you know, gonna discover you're not one of the leftist anarchists. And that's when things get ugly or hairy.
Well, I'm really going to try and change the language. Oh, no, no. we'll have to save some of the language for another day.
Yeah.
Well, but I guess I'll just wrap up. My point was that there are ways to use the leftist language or use whatever language that the person you're speaking with will be most receptive to and still explain the ideas of total freedom. Sure, so that absolutely. They're more palatable. I don't want to fall into some trap of using the state's language against myself, you know? And you shouldn't either.
Sure.
Well, I love you, Davi. I'm glad that you are safe and not dead in a car accident, even though your car
is.
Yeah,
me too. So, until next time, this was fun.
California Uber Alice.
Worms.
Meow.